telling these authentic stories. You better believe, you better believe. I've never shared this. If everything goes right in 2025, how much I make per day? It's $550,000 all the way up to $800,000 a day is what I'm making. So value your time. So I'm printing out this stuff, putting out it in my shower and inside of my house so that I could remind myself how valuable my time is. So there's really nothing that I can't, whether it's getting a great lawyer, getting a great coach. I've got two speaking coaches right now. No matter what I do, I'm always looking to figure out how to enhance the results. And going to the best trainer, the best doctors. I mean, it's the unfair advantage that most people, I don't care who's listening right now, the chances of them taking me up on my offers are slim to none. Less than 1%, less than 1/10 of 1%. Very few people have the ability to implement. Very, very few people.
Entrepreneurship, got that inspiration. Yeah, now I'm just doing it. Working on these projects, my ideas I'm pursuing. No matter what the problem, the solution, I'm proving it. Let's talk about it and open up the dialogue. Contractors telling these stories about how they got it started and how they keep it going. The passion fills the mission. Now we blasting in the orbit. We gone. That's where we grow from. Started with the vision. Make the pitch and knock it out the park like home runs. We keep it moving. Self-belief, no doubt. Pass off the mic to my man's Jim Clouk.
Jim Clouk on Contractor Stories. Tommy, how are you?
I'm great. Excited to be here.
It is great to have you here. Are you ready to talk about the current and go back in time? I tell people it's like going in a time machine. We're going to go back to when you were a kid so everyone can figure out all the cool things you did, the necessary things you did to get to where you are today.
Well, I'm ready to go back because, I mean, I bought the DeLorean.
That's right, back to the future. You know, every time I see you on social media, you have a new car or an old car. I love the cars.
You know, I'm not a Ferrari, Lambo, Porsche guy. I'm more sentimental. That 68 Firebird was the same as your grandpa had. It's a convertible, black on black, automatic. And, you know, every car I have has a story of why I have it. It's not to drive around and say, look at me. It's more of just nostalgia.
Nostalgia. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And I did see that post on Facebook, the look on Bree's face when she finally found the right key to put into the ignition, which is great. Off it went. It roared. And, you know, I'll tell you, speaking of cars here quickly before we get into your business, one of my favorite cars was Dodge Challenger SRT, which was 2015. So it was the retro one. And I think Dodge did a really cool job on it. And so it has some modern technology, but that thing's a beast. And it's just fun to drive.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've driven those.
Yeah. But you have to be careful, though, because the back end swings out. And if you look on YouTube, you'll see a lot of people make mistakes with those cars.
Oh, yeah.
And they wrap them around poles all the time. So just be careful, everybody. So, Tommy Mello, you have created a fantastic home service business in the garage door industry. It's called A1 Garage Door Service. Tell a little bit about the company.
Yeah. You know, we got a couple of businesses we're buying this year. We've bought, I think, like around 10 this year. And hopefully we'll do over 200 million. We should average 24% bottom line for the year and going on 800 employees and 19 states, soon to be 21. And we're really gaining momentum. You know, a lot of people are worried about the economy. The tide is turning into a buyer's market, call volumes down. I look at that as an opportunity. Every time you hear people getting nervous is the best time to be scaling and taking market share. Warren Buffett said, be careful when people get greedy and get greedy when people get careful. And I think that's really good advice because billionaires are born in bad economies. I hope the market continues to do great. I'm never wishing anything bad on the economy. I don't think anybody would, but I'm taking this moment to take market share. And I love this business, man. It's really, really fun. I'm actually enjoying every minute of every day. And it's challenging, you know, since we did a deal with an investor, Cortec, I still retain half the company. And we're learning, we're drinking out of a fire hose, learning. And I feel like I thought I had a master's degree. And I do, I have a master's degree in business, but I felt like I had one in home service. And I realized I just had an associate's degree. And I'll be going through the next 2 years of my doctorate degree. Because I'm learning how to raise capital and how LPs work and how to debt how to use debt to finance deals. And it's a whole new game that I'm glad I'm learning. I just turned 40 in March, and I can't tell you enough. I love to be the dumbest guy in the room but a student. So that's where we're at.
You've come a long way from painting garage doors. Isn't that pretty much how it started?
Yeah. So I had a landscaping company called Generations Landscaping. And I started with a guy named Dave Carson. And we had a $30,000, $40,000 a month business. And my buddy called me up and said, hey, can you paint garage doors for me? I got a lot of them that need to get painted. I can't find anybody reliable. And I said, sure, if it pays right. He said, $100 a door, you cover the paint, the tape, the paper. So I made $88 a door. And he had enough business to keep me busy on the weekends. But I called every garage door company in Phoenix and said, I'm a reliable guy. I'll get the samples, I'll paint everything, and I'll show up and do the work, and I'll do it all in one day. So I'll never be behind more than a week. So I earned everybody's business in Phoenix, and I'd meet up with these technicians that were just making a lot of money. And another roommate, Gabe, said, let's start a business together. And we did. 2007, went through the Great Recession. And 2010, I went my separate direction from him. We're still best friends. And my mom and stepdad moved out in 2010. And 2014, I got Adam, my integrator. And a few years later, we built a pretty good business, got on ServiceTitan, met Al Levy, and things really started to take off. And I'd say the last couple of years, I've brought on an abundance of people that know how to take us to a multi-billion dollar company. And that's the secret, is I'm a full-time recruiter now. That's what my talent is. And we're going to talk a little bit about that. I got your questions. But it's not my superpower, but my main focus is continuing to build a team. I don't need to be the hustler. I don't need to be the firefighter. I don't need to be the CEO even. I hire smart enough people that can run their own projects, that can see between the cracks, that can look around the corners. And I'm the visionary, and I'm where I need to be. I'm on the right seat now.
You are the coach. You have the best players you can recruit, and you're really smart. And everyone knows the best managers surround themselves with people who are better than them. And that's okay, though. You have to put your pride aside, don't you?
Yeah, you know, I used to want to be the guy that had all the answers. I used to be the guy that say, move out of the way. I'll handle it myself. I know how to solve all these problems. Let me do it. And I think that's the problem with most leaders, most founders, most management, most coaches is they, I wouldn't say coaches, but most of these people, they say, get out of my way. I could do it quicker. And sometimes you got to take a couple steps back and let people fall down and make mistakes. As long as you're practicing and getting better in the practice, when you play the game, you're ready to show up. You know, Larry Fitzgerald said he caught 100 better passes, 101 in practice than in the game. And I think that that's important. It's a missing piece that most people don't realize. And yeah, it's very humbling to know I don't have all the answers. It's very humbling to be in a meeting and have no idea what the hell they're talking about and be like, I can't even follow this. I mean, it's just, I was on a meeting when we called earlier and I'm looking at these reports that I could barely keep up with. There's acronyms. I don't even know what they mean. And it's all good. And I'm fine with that. And I'm content. I'm learning. But it's the fact that they could take me so much further than I could ever go by myself.
Yeah. So for the younger people who are watching this, younger people in their 20s, 30s, or people who don't have as much experience as you do, who think that they need to run everything, they need to be the answer man, they need to say, hey, you know, you're not doing it well, move aside. What do you simply say to them so they can grow a successful business and scale?
When I met Al Levy, he told me he was boring. He told me he was pretty mundane. He told me it was vanilla. He said, it's going to take some work. You got to put SOPs and manuals and standard operating procedures and checklists in place. He said, business is supposed to be mundane. It's supposed to be the system dictates the output. And a lot of people, they're used to, they get addicted to the dopamine and serotonin that's released to problems and problem solving. So when everything goes good, they're like, man, I made money today, but I'm used to the chaos. And so what I would say is your first job is to replicate yourself and get yourself out of the field and to create systems. So how do you do that? It's really easy these days. You bring a videographer with you, and as you're doing things, you're actually talking out loud. To become a coach, you need to master something. So I like coaching a lot, so I really need to think about the system and whiteboard it as I'm doing it and think about a safe way that's efficient that gets the same outcome every time. So even with the first thing I always tell people is control your own calendar, and you need an executive assistant. In a typical business with five employees or more, it might not be a full-time, it could be a VA, but you need to spend the time to build the systems, how you check your email, how to book your flights, how to book your hotel, how to basically buy back your time. And very few people want to do that because they're like, by the time I train somebody, I could have done it myself, but could you for the next 10 years?
Yeah.
That's what people, they underestimate the short-term loss because they don't have patience, because they're always in the fire. They're always trying to fix things in real time versus letting a couple things go. Maybe you don't have a great quarter, but all of a sudden you have scalability. And I think that's, I've had so many executives here day one try to hire assistants. And they're like, man, they don't get it. And I'm like, first of all, look in the mirror. You're a bad coach. Secondly, you didn't delegate properly. Thirdly, you didn't hire right. Because if you got the right person and you gave them the right instructions and just had a process, they would kill it. So hit record on Zoom when you're booking your next flight. Explain what you're doing out loud and say, the reason I don't use Southwest unless I'm flying an hour or less. Here's what airline I go to first because they got a hub. Here's my TSA. And I like to go direct, but if I don't go direct, I like to take the red eye, whatever it might be. Put that in there and make sure you got everything, and then just transcribe it and put it into a SOP manual. And all of a sudden, boom, I'm even doing this with my cleaning lady. And this is how much I enjoy it so much for business that I'm doing it with my personal life. I mean, how do you like your laundry? Where do you like your socks? I go buy all brand new socks once a year. And that way I don't have to match them because it's more efficient. It's lean. And people are like, why do you get so granular? I'm like, if I buy back 2 minutes and I do that 18 times a day, that is a lot of time. And if I continue to compound that each week, all of a sudden I'm doing things that make a difference most of the time. Efficiency.
And time is important, isn't it? Because we can make more money, they say, but we can't get time back. And as we get older, time means different things to us. So, Tommy, you're an old guy. You turned 40. So I don't know how you get out of bed in the morning. It must be tough at your age. When you get older, though, you really appreciate time more, and it's really critical. So what you're saying is, if you're in your 20s and 30s, learn now how to be more efficient with time.
Yeah, and I used to, and I'll get into my youth, but money is super important. Money gives the opportunities to buy back time. You can't hire a landscaper and a good plumber and hire someone to help train you, and a dietitian and a massage therapist and everything that I have, and haircuts at the house. You can't hire all these things if you don't have money. So I used to say money, time, health. Now I say health, time, money, because time's useless if you're in a wheelchair. It's not fun. So health comes first. And we were just talking about that before we started the show. So health, being able to get up in the morning with energy and feel great when you look in the mirror. And then time is super important, and making sure it's quality time. Be where your feet are. And yes, money is a tool if used correctly. And money is not the root of all evil. The love of money is the root of all evil. Money is important. You are expected and obligated to make a profit, period, if you get into business. Or otherwise do a 501(c), be a nonprofit, and go live your dream. But if you're going to do a business and you've got employees that are counting on you, you must make profit, period.
It's your responsibility. You have to. It's what you're supposed to do. Tommy, let's talk about your childhood a bit. Hopefully it was a good one. So we're going to go back in time. We're going to bring us back to when you were around 10 years old or so. Who was Tommy Mello as a boy?
So when I was 7, I used to listen to my mom and dad argue on the toilet. I put my head up against the drywall and I'd hear them, and I'd get really sad when I was a kid. I literally, and it was always about money. It was always about bills. It was always about, you know, making our mortgage payment, paying the bills, putting us into special programs and going on field trips. And as a young age, I never wanted to make anybody else go through the thoughts that I had worrying about money as 7 years old. I used to get really upset when my sister wanted, you know, Eternity perfume and wanted Guess jeans. I'd say, Mom and Dad can't afford that stuff. I'd go to Kmart and we'd buy the $10 jeans, and I was happy. I'd make my clothes go as long as I could. And I wasn't like, my mom and dad would really do a lot for us. I got to eat every day, anything I wanted. They'd take us on trips. It wasn't like we were living on food stamps, but when my mom and dad got a divorce at that age, around 7 or 8, you know, my mom decided she was going to keep our house and she was going to get 3 jobs. She bartended, she waited tables and was a realtor, and she'd go door knocking and she'd go to every for sale by owner. And all my buddies had the magnet of my mom and made fun of me, but it was funny. And, you know, I just decided I wanted to help mom as much as possible. So I shoveled snow and mowed lawns. I didn't give her the money, but I always tried to be able to support myself if I wanted to do something. And at 12 years old, I got a job at Rookie's Clubhouse washing dishes for $4.05 under the table. But I was always curious. I was very much into church. I was focused on helping as much as possible, but I became, you know, I was goofy in school. But I got good grades and I had great friendships, and I didn't spend a lot of time in the house. If we were in the house, we'd shoot pool, play ping pong. I had a pool. My buddy across the street had basketball. So we'd go back and forth all summer long. We'd watch the Sandlot, and I enjoyed my childhood. I really did, but there was a lot of pressure. Knowing my mom and dad just weren't doing good. My sister's 6 years older, so money was a big concern. And you don't really know how good you have it till you know how you don't know till you've been to rock bottom. And watching my mom come home with high heels on, just aching, not being able to move, and then go do it every day over and over again. And the stress that went along with that, it's really hard to think about now. And I said, there's no way I want this for my life. I don't want this for anybody around me. I want to make sure to get money out of the way. Money was very, very important from my childhood. To not have a lot of it shaped a lot of the decisions I made for the last 2 decades.
What was your decision, or what made you make a decision to go to college and then ultimately get an MBA?
So it's really, really funny when you think about it, is because I don't have kids yet, but I always knew I would be successful. And the theory in my mind was, if I'm going to be ultra successful and I want to be the right kind of mentor for my kids eventually, I want them to know, because the kids are kind of your shadow. I wanted to tell them, hey, dad still got a master's degree. Don't forget that I went to school. And I grew up that you got to get your degree. That's what we were told. And so I wanted to live that right life to be able to always say, I furthered myself. I continued my education. Now, hindsight is 2020. I think, unfortunately, I'll have enough money for my whole family tree for the next 100 years. I believe that, but I never want to have anybody ever receive. They need to earn it, or they don't know what it's like, or they blow it. And they never live the life, because you don't know what you have till you don't have it. And the fight or flight inside of me, the killer's edge, that's because I came from nothing. And it's important. And I don't know exactly. I haven't picked out my whole parental guidelines yet. You know, I hope kids are in my future. I don't have this crystal ball of a date that this is when I'm going to get Bree pregnant. But the fact is that's a big decision and stuff we're working on. And I don't care how old I am. I work out all the time. I'm in great shape. I want to be able to throw the baseball when my kids are 18. Yeah, well, my grandpa was born in 1910. He retired in 1974 from GM, General Motors. Moved out to Lake Havasu in 1974. Now, my dad has a family of 12 siblings. So my grandpa could do 100 pull-ups. He lived to be 90 years old. He golfed every day from 1974 to 2000. He had 16 hole-in-ones and countless amount of eagles. Wow. So my grandpa influenced me a lot, just hard worker, came and did a lot of stuff. I mean, he was 73 when I was born. And then my grandma on my mom's side happens to be, you know, I tell people, yeah, my mom wasn't around a lot. She was working, and my dad was around as much as he could. But my grandma was there half the week. She cooked for me anything I wanted, and she loved me more probably than her own kids. I mean, out of her 36 grandchildren, she told me I was her favorite. And I listened to grandma's stories. I became a really great listener to my grandparents. I'd sit there, even if they were the same stories, they'd love the fact that I'd listen to them. So I learned how to listen. I probably talk more than I ever have these last 2 years, or this last 2 decades, because I listened so much as a kid. I'd hear their stories and I'd laugh and I'd smile, even though I knew the ending. And I just loved hearing them and them impact me. My grandpa started out as a coal miner in Pennsylvania, Scranton, Pennsylvania. And my grandma just, she loved me so much. She would do anything for me. She gave me her car when I turned 16 out of all her grandkids. She gave everybody $500, gave me her car.
Wow. So Tommy, if you go back in time, if you could go back in time and you can get in that DeLorean and you're going to go back in time, what would you tell your 20-year-old self? Now that's two decades ago, but, and it's half your life, but so much has happened in the past two decades. What would you tell yourself from the 40-year-old to the 20-year-old?
Well, I learned how to invest when I was 16. I was sitting in my cousin's red Corvette, and he said, did you know what a Roth IRA is? I said, I have no idea. He goes, let's go right now and open you up one. So we did. And he said, how much can you afford a month? I said, probably $50. He said, I want you to sit down and with me, we're going to figure out a way for you to get the $300 a month in your Roth IRA. And I did it from 16 on. Now I have in that Roth IRA, 600,000. And I believe in 4 years from now, it'll be 2.5 million. So no matter what, I was destined to be a multimillionaire and retire at a good age. But what I would tell young Tommy, 20 years old, is I want you to focus on one thing. I don't want these crazy ideas. I used to always say when I was 20 years old, I'm putting my eggs in a lot of baskets. I'm taking on a lot. And I would say, focus on one thing and watch that basket fill up and overflow into other things. Focus on, you know, owning a market instead of going to a lot of markets. I would tell young Tommy, the one thing you need to be better at is I want you to get the strongest you possibly can in understanding financial statements and understanding what key performance indicators are. And I want you to delegate to elevate yourself, not dumb stuff. I want you to figure out a way to remove yourself. So every time you start something, Tommy, I want you to think, does this have to be done by you? And if not, what do you need to set up to remove yourself? Because I was a one-man army for the next decade. From 20 to 30, I did it all. And I never had a really good CFO or financial person in my business. Mm-hmm. So I think those are the key things I'd give myself.
And what you described is the typical small business owner, not just a self-employed person, the typical small business owner who has people, but they don't know how to properly delegate and they may not be big enough. So we all know that in home service, the most difficult transition isn't truck 20 to 30. It's truck 1 to 2, right? That first jump. Do you have any suggestions, recommendations, tips for these business owners that are like, yeah, I know I need to get out of the truck and get some other people? How do they make that big jump? Because it's a huge jump, right? Because they have to invest in 100% more of everything.
Well, performance pay. And then so many people, they try to find somebody at a discount. They try to say, I'll pay you $13 an hour for you to learn. And that's what you get, a $13 an hour person. Instead of figuring out, and this is simple, you build a simple Excel sheet and you say, if I could pay these people where they could make $100,000 a year with all the benefits, but what if I could get other than that $13 an hour person, what if they give me 5x the results? Could I find somebody that I could give $65 to that makes great money? Because everybody's saying, I can't find great people, these millennials, these Gen X, they don't work hard. They want to be involved. They want to know they have a future. They want to know you care. They want to know their dreams are important. And I think that's the missing piece. That's the missing connection. And so what I would tell these people, and there's a lot of them out there, is you're always thinking about how to undercut your labor, about how to take advantage as much as you can of your manufacturers and your distribution centers. When you do a deal with somebody, you're trying to say, how do I win? And they lose. Instead of, and I'm not, this isn't a self-promotion, but build a business where everybody wins. How do you figure out a way for your vendors to win? How do you figure out a way for the employees to win big? And if you had that mindset, the elevate mindset, it would change everything, because all of a sudden they would have skin in the game. They would work harder. They would fill in the gaps. They would recruit for you. They'd make sure they're getting good reviews. And that's the secret, I think, to building a strong business is caring more. You got to care more than they care about themselves. And very, very few people have that mindset. They said, I took all the risk. I've done all the suffering. I've had the relationships burned. I've been lied to, stolen from. The bank scrutinized me. I mortgaged my house. I deserve to win before anybody else because I took all the risk. And that mentality of leadership is how a bad business evolves into worse. And I believe with the right coaching, a C player could become an A player. But an A player to me, when I meet an A player, and I meet them all the time, typically they already have a job. They're not looking, first of all. They're not on Indeed, Glassdoor, Monster, ZipRecruiter. They're not looking. So you've got to recruit them from what they're currently doing to something better. And getting their personal, their significant other on board, usually it's the wife that says, man, you would be great at this company. And they do so much for their people. So I think when I'm looking for an A player, there's a few things I look for. Number one is their eye contact, their confidence level. Do I know that they love themselves? Do they smile? Do they actually have a conviction when they talk? Are they passionate? Do they know how to tell a story? I don't really care about their sales skills because these soft skills, if for example, if you were a busboy or a server or a bartender or worked in hospitality at a hotel, you've got the soft skills that allow you to make eye contact and have empathy in your voice and sincerity. And when you could add these things up and you already got that piece, I'll teach you the technical aspect. We'll teach you operational because you've already got the gift to gab. You care about people. I can tell you care. Or you wouldn't be busting a table, refilling my water, smiling while you do it and asking me what else I could do. And just the way you could just tell they love life and they actually help anybody that's having a bad day when they talk to them. Oh my gosh, it's a great day. And I've got a test for everybody. When your phone goes off, I want you to think about this from now on. And you look down and your caller ID pops up. Is think about the way they make you feel. Do you go, oh God, what's this? Hopefully your wife doesn't make you do that or your husband. And I understand the kids are inevitable. Every once in a while, you'll get some of those. But when you have people around you that you just, and it might not be they're a bad person, but it just might mean, for me, I'll tell you what I don't like, is I'm a quick guy. I make quick decisions. A lot of people, different types of personalities, they like to tell me about their day. And they like to tell me detail by detail. And because of my schedule, usually I'm like, I got the solution to that is say, I got 5 minutes. So you got to get to the point. I got 5 minutes. So that's what I do. But if it's really just like, I just don't like, it's a constant battle with this person, then you need to get them out of your life. And the big thing I always say is you got to look at your circle. You got to look at your friends, your family, the people you're spending the most time with, and they need to help motivate you. They need to help bring you up. They need to help make you the best version of yourself. You need to have goals and you need to be around people that are doing better than you. When I go golfing, if I go with guys that are like 25 handicap, getting wasted, don't really care, goofing off, not counting their strokes, it's not going to make me any better. When I go with guys taking it super seriously, I mean, they got the perfect lineup for their swing. They're shooting birdies and potentially eagles, and they're really focused on winning. I will become a better golfer, and the same thing exists for life. And so an A player, they don't complain a lot. They've got great ideas. They want to be involved. They care for the client. They care for the vendors. They care about each other. They look out for the dispatchers and the CSRs if they're a technician, and they want to be a team player. It's not I, it's we. And we're doing this together. It's team. So they played in a team. They practiced every day. They're passionate. Typically, I find somebody, they said, yeah, I used to be in the symphony or played karate, or I used to do jujitsu, or I was passionate. I practiced every day to be better at it. And if they tell me a story about something, I played the piano. And I played every day till my fingers were black and blue. Perfect. So you were really passionate, excited, and you knew consistency, hard work, showing up. And you know, sometimes delayed gratification and sometimes discipline brought you there. You've showed those traits. You've done it in your past. We'll bring that muscle memory back into this job.
Just a quick note here, guys. I want to ask you for a favor. My guests and I really want to bring you, the home service professional, the best quality podcast possible. I just have one simple request. Would you please subscribe to this podcast right now? In return for your favor, I promise to bring you the best of the best in the home service world. Guests like Billy Stevens, Tommy Mello, Ismael Valdez, Al Levy, and so many more. Thank you for listening, and I promise to bring you much more just like this.
Hey, this is Joe Crisera, and you're listening to Contractor Stories with Jim Clough.
Tommy, you often say that leaders are readers, and I know you're a voracious reader. You are also an author. You have actually helped me out with some books. You referred this one to me, They Ask You Answer by Marcus Sheridan. I talk about this all the time. This kind of changed my business a bit. I appreciate that, by the way. What number one book, and I know you've read a lot of books, but what's the one that influenced you the most?
So 2008, I'm sitting with my CPA. And he's a really smart guy. The reason he took me on as a client is he said, I would never take on, a 25-year-old. I would never. He goes, I only have 10 clients. And he goes, but something about you, he goes, I think you're going to become my largest client. He goes, but I want to give you this book. He handed me The Ultimate Sales Machine he handed me Michael Gerber's E-Myth. I read that in 2 days. And by the way, the book before that was To Kill a Mockingbird. And then, just the high school books.
Mm-hmm.
And I never was a reader. And all of a sudden, I read that book and I came back and I read The Ultimate Sales Machine. And he said, Tommy, this red book here, I call it the Red Bible. He goes, you read this, you study this, you put this into use, you will have everything you want. So I'd say those two books, then he handed me The Richest Man of Babylon. So the culmination of those three initial books, the first really self-help books I've read, one taught me about money, one taught me about running a business that's systems, and then Chet Holmes, The Red Bible, taught me about time management, recruiting A players, about just the tips in there about don't sell products, sell on the blue ocean of what those products will do for you. And when I studied them, and I mean studied them, it changed my whole perception. It changed everything.
I see behind you, of course, I've been to your office a number of times. I see you've got hundreds of books back there. How many books do you read a month or listen to or combined?
I mean, on a good month, 10 to 12. On a bad month, 3 or 4. It really depends on the size of the book. I mean, there's some books that take me a lot longer to get through. I remember Red Notice. I was sitting down, one of my neighbor's father who passed away since then. He said, Tommy, you're a reader. He goes, I got a book for you to read. Pick it up when you get a chance. It's called Red Notice. I picked it up and it was this freaking big. And I read the whole darn thing. And it's about this guy's story about how he was in Russia. And I read the whole book just to be, because I really look up to my elders. And I really, when I read that book and I started talking to him about it, his mind was blown. How quick I read it and that I knew every single detail when he asked me. And I'll tell you what. It's like anything else. It's like a muscle. The more you flex it, the better you get, the more comprehension you get out of it. And so I become able to devour books. But if I read something about the Pareto rule or Parkinson's law, I skip that chapter because I already know it. So it allows me to read way faster because I can just devour books because I'm pulling out the useful information. And if there's a book that I have to read everything, it takes me a little bit longer. No, it's a great book. And what that book helped me do is just realize every single thing I do, can I buy it?
Yeah.
Like, for example, the girl that comes and cuts my hair. How much time does it take? Pumping my own gas. I don't do that anymore. Washing my own car. I get my car detailed. It's almost obnoxious how much I delegate and how much time I buy. People are like, and it's not because I'm privileged. It's just because I understand time value of money. And the fact is, if I could buy something, I figured out, I literally did a pivot table and figured out, if everything goes right in 2025, how much I make per day? I mean, the number was, I mean, I've never shared this because it's kind of, it's $550,000 all the way up to $800,000 a day is what I'm making. So value your time. So I'm printing out this stuff, putting out it in my shower and inside of my house so that I can remind myself how valuable my time is. So there's really nothing that I can't, whether it's getting a great lawyer, getting a great coach. I've got 2 speaking coaches right now. No matter what I do, I'm always looking to figure out how to enhance the results. And going to the best trainer, the best doctors. I mean, it's the unfair advantage that most people, I don't care who's listening right now, the chances of them taking me up on my offers are slim to none. Less than 1%, less than 0.1%. That people will actually, it's easy to hear these things and learn these things, but implementing them, very few people have the ability to implement. Very, very few people. In fact, everybody's entitled to come through my shop free. Nobody, very few people do it. And what are they going to implement when they come out? I always say, what's your first thing you're going to implement? I mean, they buy Al Levy's manuals. They don't implement them. You know, the seven power contractor. Everybody says, what did you do? And I said, I actually do the stuff. I do the work. I don't read the book. I live the book. I apply the knowledge. And it's few and far between. That's my one of my superpowers. I could read something and then I start it today. They wait. Everybody says one day. Yeah, one day I'm going to start that. Hey, it's on the roadmap. I say, is today, is it one day or is today day one? And for me, it's A1 from day one.
So Howard Partridge, Failure to Implement, he wrote a book on that, right? And
yeah, I got it on my shelf right over there. It's true.
If we fail to implement, there's nothing there. Showing up is 90%, right? So we can talk all we want, but you've got to start. And you know the old saying, when's the best time to start a business? Right now.
10 years ago. Well, yesterday.
10 years ago. Yeah. But we all don't have a DeLorean. Can't go back in time, Tommy. That's you. So
the best time to start a business. But ultimately, I might fight that notion a little bit because so many people go start a business with no money, no capital, no business plan. And the only thing I tell you is, unless you want to give 7 years to sweat equity and make all the mistakes, have access to an SBA loan, have your ducks in a row and your house in order. If you've got a new baby on the way, and you depend on putting that kid up. You made that decision. I mean, ultimately, you've got to look at your personal life. You got to figure out, did you save enough money to be able to get out of the field? Because if not, you've got the first 5 to 10 years of sweat equity. You're working. You don't have a business. I don't care what your taxes say. You own a job. And it's going to be a lot of hard work if you've got nothing to start it with. And they got no money. How are you going to hire Dan Antonelli to do your brand? How are you going to put up a website? How are you going to pay for PPC? Where's your training center going to go? How do you rent a building? And you say, listen, don't make those big mistakes up first, but there's some core fundamental things you're going to need. And you don't have the money to even buy a uniform. How do you buy your first truck? You can't take all this out on a loan. You have for the bank, you don't have any proof to concept. So just to get the one good truck, the good brand, the good website, get a good uniform, invest in Al Levy's manuals. Like, it takes a little bit of money. I'd say $100,000 will get you a long way.
Yep. And you do have to invest constantly in education.
I want to go through my superpower. I really believe the superpower I have is when I'm around people. They look at me and they say, you're not proud. You're not cocky. You're an ordinary guy. My ability to motivate others, when I tell my story and I say I'm not anything special, I wasn't born with a silver spoon, I don't have anybody in here just consulting me every day. I think my ability to motivate, you know, 10X is better than 2X. It's a great book. I think really focusing on getting the best out of my team and seeing their strengths and celebrating the wins. And I do that with a lot of other contractors and a lot of other businesses. There was other questions on here. I know we ran out of time. Yeah, you know, 25 millionaires came out of our first deal at A1, and we changed potentially 100 family trees. And I think that's a big deal. And when I watched that and I saw people, the vacations, the time that they were having with their families, their health, and I watched this all come together, I said, man, I want more of this. This is like a drug to me, watching other people winning. So the idea of freedom is really doing what you want, when you want, with who you want, changing everybody's life, having everybody come up, building a legacy. And so the idea of freedom is, a lot of people come in my shop and they say, where do you start? What's the most important thing? And I say, you ever been to the doctors? Let's say, of course I've been to a doctor. I say, does a doctor, when you walk in, do they give you the prescription or do they ask you a lot of questions? How much are you working out? What's your diet like? What's your anxiety levels? How are the kids? How much are you sleeping? Are you drinking a lot? What kind of cardio are we doing? Do they test different things? There's no one answer. I got to look at these different businesses. So I want to help businesses build a company that's worth a lot of money. Because ultimately, if they want to be multi-millionaires, I think they could get there over 20 years by running a good business. Or they could build a business in 3 years and walk away with 20, 30, 40, 50, $100 million. And that's what I want to do. And I want each and every person that helped them get there to benefit. So you're not going to be in the Freedom Group if you don't have an equity incentive program and have people that helped you come up that are going to benefit from a transaction. Everybody talks about build a business to sell. John Warlow, built to sell. Nobody really has a program that I've seen that really help implement the things I'm talking about and actually make sure they're living it at home, at work, and everywhere they go. And if we could do that, we'll change the world.
Tommy, people ask me all the time about our relationship. How do I know Tommy Mello? How do you get his time and so forth? And I tell people, Tommy will talk to anybody and he wants to help you. But really the best way to get to know Tommy is to go to his events. I went to your vertical track events, met a lot of great people. It's amazing all the people that you introduced me to who I now know in the industry. And, it's fantastic. So I tell everybody who's watching this, come to Tommy's events. The Freedom event's going to be outstanding. And meet Tommy. If you want one of his books and he can't give you one, I've got some books because we bought a bunch of them, right? Love giving out your book. And just come to the event, meet a bunch of people, and Tommy will shake your hand and he'll become your best friend.
I do. I meet a lot of people, and the best way to get in front of me, I mean, Lord knows I burn the candle on both ends. My schedule is packed, but I'm there. And a lot of people come up to me, they're like, how can I work with you? Can you coach me? Can I come in and shadow you? And I'm like, number one is you're not going to get anything out of it. I've got 800 people to delegate to. I've got Jim Leslie. I've got Dan Miller. I've got Luke Martin. I've got what you would get watching me. It's like coming to one of my workouts. I just did 110 dumbbells, 4 sets of 12. Is that going to help you? Probably not. So the best thing to do is get with me and I'll help you for where you're at today. And I know this because I started with nothing. I was the guy in the truck. And so I've got a lot of the solutions, but I don't have one prescription for everybody. Everybody wants the magic bullet and I don't have one. Because everybody's different. And that's what this freedom thing's about, man. And listen, pay for performance, equity incentive program, scorecards, KPIs, outcome and key results. The things I talk about, they're not spoken about in the home service. Not a lot. Private equity knows about this stuff, but private equity's missing what we have. The passion, the understanding, the care of the people, the blue collar mentality. They don't have that. So you combine the two. Whew. Look out. And you know what? If somebody's got a passion and they really want to help people and they're not focused on a broken wallet mindset of they can't charge enough. So many people say raise their prices, right? I'm so sick of that. I used to say that. Don't raise your price if you're not going to raise your caliber of employees. You're not going to take care of them. If you're not going to drive a new truck and show up the same day. If you're not going to leave a raving fan. If you're not going to care about the customer more than they care about themselves, then do not raise your prices. Continue to be the cheapest because that's all you got going. And that's all you can compete on is you're the cheapest. You're the most pathetic. You don't value your time. You don't value who you are. You hate who you are in the mirror. Be the cheapest because that's all you'll ever be. You want more for your life. You got to run a business that takes care of people, that cares about them and the client more than you care about anything else for now. Then you could raise your price. Then you could have a life of freedom. But until then, continue to be the cheapest because that's all you got.
What you're saying is offer high value.
High value across the board to your vendors, across your partnerships, across to your internal customers, which are your employees. Offer value to them, and then you could raise your prices, which is value add. But you can't do that by just saying, I changed my price book.
Nope, you can't just do the one thing. Tommy, looking forward to seeing you soon, my friend.
Thank you.
Just a quick note here, guys. I want to ask you for a favor. My guests and I really want to bring you, the home service professional, the best quality podcast possible. I just have one simple request. Would you please subscribe to this podcast right now? In return for your favor, I promise to bring you the best of the best in the home service world. Guests like Billy Stevens, Tommy Mello, Ismael Valdez, Al Levy, and so many more. Thank you for listening, and I promise to bring you much more just like this. Yeah, telling these authentic stories, you better-